You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everybody. From Teaneck, New Jersey, Scotty continues our debate over locavores with Stephen Dubner, who's here in the studio with me. I'm calling about supporting local farmers and keeping business local. I'm part of a dairy co-op that supports local farmers and particularly those who sell raw milk. You're not allowed to sell raw milk in New Jersey, so I own a part of a cow so I can buy raw milk, which not only supports organic farming, but a particular kind of eating. Is the co-op model something that works in the locavore investigation that you've done?
Yeah, it's certainly better. And also, it's worth noting that milk is something that's always been more local than others because of the perishability factor. The issue he raises of raw milk The issue she raises of raw milk is incredibly interesting. I believe that milk is the one food in America that cannot be bought or sold in raw form.
There's the takeaway. Milk is the one food in America that cannot be bought or sold in raw form. 877-8-MY-TAKE with your story. But history was made yesterday. Can you recognize this cultural icon? Hint, he's animated. That's right, the Roadrunner, but not the real Roadrunner, not the real animated Roadrunner. Yesterday, IBM made history with a computer that crossed what's called the petaflop threshold. That's 1,000 quadrillion individual floating point operations that took place in a second. Jack Dungara, professor of computer science at the University of Tennessee, joins us. Jack, thanks for being with us.
Well, good morning.
Explain the importance of this threshold, 1,000 quadrillion floating point operations in a second. What does it mean you can do with this computer?
Well, it's the fastest computer that is in existence today. And just to put it in comparison, it's twice as fast as the one that was the fastest just a few days ago.
Has that one been thrown out in the dumpster somewhere?
Not exactly. No, yeah. That's a fairly expensive piece of equipment that'll be used for a number of years. But it is number two today, and this machine at one petaflop, as you say, is number one.
Well, glad to hear it, Jack. Now, this machine was made by stringing together a lot of fairly rudimentary technology chips, you know, chips that you can actually find in appliances you can buy at, you know, Best Buy, but putting them in an architecture that's massively parallel and enables the computer to do all kinds of, large-scale things. Can you explain exactly how this computer was built?
Sure. If you think about processors, like the processors in your computer, there's 122,000 of these processors in this box, let's say. The box is the size of very large room, about 5,000 square feet. And the processors are very complicated in the sense that they come from a hybrid design. So they're commodity processors like the processors you would find in your own PC, and they use a processor that's actually derived from the Sony PlayStation's processor. That is, the computer that is in the Sony PlayStation has been modified slightly and is used. They have many of these processors in them. So there's an interesting...
Well, that's what the engineers are saying anyway. Yeah, we modified it, so it's not a real PlayStation, right? It's serious work, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Jack, let me just jump in here for 1 second. For us lay people who aren't necessarily as familiar with all of the mechanisms and so on and so forth, what does this really mean when you're saying that this is more powerful than the most powerful computer to... days ago? What does that mean to me, someone who just uses a laptop for internet and data processing?
Right. So for the average person, it doesn't mean very much, except that the technology and the all the knowledge that went into building this machine will eventually trickle down to the home consumer in some sense. And that may take a number of years.
But at the research level, this machine is great at doing large-scale simulations of, like, nuclear explosions, I think I read?
Absolutely. We couldn't... this machine will give us a much better window into what has happened or what will happen in certain situations. Today we do numerical simulations to help us understand our world around us, and this is the most powerful device. Think of it sort of like the Hubble telescope for computers.
That's a great analogy, Jack, and pretty totally like awesome graphics, right?
Incredible.
Yes. Awesome. Yeah, yes. Okay, Jack Dungara, thank you very much. He's a professor of computer science at the University of Tennessee, talking about the threshold that was passed yesterday, the one petaflop threshold. I know where I was.
It sounds so exciting, but I'm just not sure what to be excited about.
It means that we can simulate nuclear explosions without having to detonate any bombs, which I think makes me feel a little better.
Although,
and also,
you know,
climate change.
The early space exploration, when we first started sending people into space, I was talking with someone who was at NASA at the time. He said the computing power then would fit into a Palm Pilot now. Right?
Yeah.
So we are capable of great things without. It'll be interesting to see what we're capable with.